Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. Front page. Commentary. Peaceful protest. Black Lives Matter rally is surreal experience, by Stuart Doreen. The protesters literally took to the streets Sunday night during Midland's largest protest I can remember, and one of the truly remarkable nights in my 25 years here. I didn't have expectations for the event billed as a Black Lives Matter rally at Midland Park Mall. In my experience, Midland hasn't been home to this type of activism, certainly not like what is seen in larger metropolitan areas across the nation. But before the night was over, I experienced hundreds protesting the death of Minneapolis's George Floyd, a counter-protest led by a Hispanic born-again Christian and supporter of police and President Donald Trump, who called himself Niño America, and dozens of officers who stayed true to their training for such situations and stayed calm, even as one officer, coincidentally an African American, was hit in the head by a water bottle thrown by a Black Lives Matter protest. There were horses, impromptu prayer sessions. The move of the protest to the streets, Midkiff Road and the Loop 250 Service Road, and hundreds of cell phones catching every moment for the world to see through social media. It was for all the world to see, although my guess is no one was more riveted than Midlanders. Even beyond the hundreds looking on from the mall parking lot, there were thousands who watched on the Reporter Telegram's Facebook page. Midland is new to protests of this scale, and there were a lot of residents who did not want Midland to join the lists of other cities where protests turned violent and calls for justice turned to opportunities for looting. But on this night, it was about the peaceful protest. Sure, there were instances when it appeared the powder keg would be lighted, but it didn't, much to the relief of those protesters who felt that the event was about their voices being heard and was an opportunity to deal with the frustration over what they saw in Minnesota and had experienced in Midland. People needed to release the tension they felt, and this was a great way for them to do that today, said longtime Midlander Courtney Ratliff, an African-American man. There were people dedicated to making sure this happened the right way. But in my view, this was also an examination of the patience and tolerance of a police department under the largest microscope of them all. While there were some on the Black Lives Matter side working with police, there were others willing to see how far they could go, how many insults they could fire off, and if it was possible, if they could press the right button that might lead to escalation. Police officers for hours were tested with comments about their character. Some wanted to align them with the heinous former officer arrested on a manslaughter and murder charge in Minneapolis. Later in the evening, some protesters targeted an African-American officer. During an episode at the intersection of Midkiff and the Service Road, it was suggested that the officer was the enemy, simply because he wore a uniform and carried a badge. His ability to keep his cool spoke volumes about his temperament and his character. Herman's men and women passed Sunday night's test with flying colors because they found a way to keep the peace, protect property, and still not be part of the story. I think May 31st, 2020 will remain in my memory for a long time. It was surreal and significant at the same time. I kept waiting for things to go so wrong, but that didn't happen. It's hard for me to think the mass shootings in Odessa occurred 9 months ago. That seems like a lifetime. Since then, there was the bond election ballot box fiasco, coronavirus, negative oil price, and now protests on a scale never experienced. When are things going to return to normal? What will tomorrow bring? I'm not sure I want to know. At the end of the night, it was 10:30 p.m., hours after I thought I would be done for the evening, I started my car, and what comes on the Sirius radio station? Rage Against the Machine, an activist band that soared to fame in the 1990s, protesting corporate America, cultural imperialism, and government oppression. It seemed such an appropriate way for this day to end. CNN legal analyst says MPD went above and beyond during Anders' arrest, by Stuart Doreen. A law enforcement analyst for CNN recently stated that Midland Police Department officers were going above and beyond to be patient and for letting the situation play out during the May 16th arrest of a Midland man in Southeast Midland. CNN had on its website last week a report about the arrest of Ty Anders, with information from the arrest affidavit and information from Anders' lawyer. However, the report also featured comments from the network's analyst, James A. Gagliano, who stated he did not fault officers for drawing their weapons during the arrest of Anders after an alleged traffic violation. When he, Anders, wasn't compliant, they, police, had to be suspicious that there was something more there because he was running away from a ticket for running a stop sign, Gagliano stated in the CNN.com article. That's not normal behavior. A previous Reporter Telegram article, based on footage released by the city, stated that after Anders parked in the driveway of the 3600 block of East Pecan Avenue, an officer can be heard several times telling him to exit his vehicle. Anders steps out of the vehicle about 6 minutes after the officer can first be heard asking and raises his arms before lying in the grass. That footage also shows when Anders' grandmother appears to fall on top of him. A widely debated portion of the original cell phone video, recorded by a bystander and posted on social media. It occurs several minutes after Anders exits his vehicle. In the dashboard camera footage, it appears that the elderly woman faints. Paramedics assist her for about 15 minutes of the duration of the video. This was a case of police officers not just doing their job, Gagliano said of Anders' arrest in the CNN.com article, but going above and beyond, to be patient and to let this play out when this young man put his hands down by his waist and refused to comply. Anders' attorney, Justin Moore, stated in an email after the city's release of footage related to Anders' arrest that it is important to note that the videos still depict blatant racial profiling by the officer who stopped Ty. Nowhere on either video does it corroborate what was stated in the police report in which it alleges that Ty Anders didn't stop at a stop sign. Midland City Councilman John Norman, in a Facebook post this past weekend, wrote that the police department must stop its use of racial profiling. Norman then called for the creation of either an advisory board or community liaison officer position as part of a new policing model. We must revamp policies that have been put in place since before I was born, Norman wrote. If cities and people who are constantly growing and changing, how are policies and procedures not changing with them? We must stop kicking our kids, our elders, our citizens to the ground when they are in compliance or pose no threat to anyone, Norman stated in the Facebook post. Midland Memorial Expands Visitation Policy, by Caitlin Randall. After restricting visitors amid the coronavirus pandemic, Midland Memorial Hospital is expanding its visitation policy, effective today, Tuesday, as the number of inpatient COVID-19 cases continues to dwindle. Most patients will now be allowed one visitor, MMH CEO Russell Myers said during a press conference on Monday. There is an exception for pediatric patients and mothers in labor and delivery, both of which will be allowed two visitors. Myers said the new policy does not mean one visitor at a time. The visitor chosen by the patient, or two visitors for pediatrics and labor and delivery, will be the only people allowed during the duration of the patient's stay. They will be allowed two people in the delivery room, but afterward, the hospital must revert to a one-visitor policy as long as the mother and baby are inpatients. Children under the age of 18 will still not be allowed in the hospital, Myers said. Visitors must enter through the emergency department entrance where they will be screened for the coronavirus. If they have a fever or report any exposure to someone with COVID-19, they will not be allowed to enter, Myers said. All visitors are required to wear face masks. Myers said only under extraordinary circumstances will patients have the option to swap out a visitor, such as if a patient is dying. Visiting hours will continue to end at 8 p.m., and all visitors will be asked to leave at that time, according to Myers. Exceptions for allowing visitors to stay the night will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, he said. Pediatric patients are allowed one overnight visitor. Out of 143 total patients at MMH, three of those are coronavirus patients, Myers said. He said those three are confirmed positives and none are in the critical care unit. One of those three is a resident at Midland Medical Lodge. The City of Midland Health Department confirmed three new cases of coronavirus on Monday, bringing the overall count to 132. Before Monday, the last new case of coronavirus was reported on May 28th. Positives have remained largely stagnant in Midland, even as restaurants, bars, and other businesses continue to reopen. MDC Devising Small Business Assistance Program by Mella McEwen. Board members of the Midland Development Corporation discussed plans to implement a small business assistance program at their public meeting Monday. We've been talking with business owners about how we could effectively help, John Trachitti, MDC Executive Director, said, adding that Mayor Patrick Payton also desired such an assistance program. Other development corporations have implemented similar programs, including Amarillo, said Sarah Harris, Director of Operations. The proposal from the MDC staff would take $2 million from the MDC's promotion fund to provide small businesses with forgivable loans of up to $25,000. Recipients of the loans must prove that all funds were used on payroll by September 30th. After discussion among board members, the proposal was changed to offer up to $1 million in loans rather than the $2 million, with the board reassessing the program as it progresses. Another change was using taxable wage totals from 2019 IRS Form 940 rather than the first quarter 2020 Form 941 after it was pointed out that the tax deadline had been moved because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Wesley Bounds, MDC chair, said a number of small businesses seeking assistance under the Paycheck Protection Program had found the process difficult and struggled to apply for assistance. We can make it easier. Tell them these are forms they need to provide when they apply, he said. This is designed to be much easier to apply for, and we hope to get participation from those who were reluctant to apply for PPP or the CARES Act. Under the proposal, businesses must be located within Midland city limits and either headquartered in Midland or have a franchise that is wholly locally owned and in existence since January 1, 2019. To qualify, businesses must not have more than 15 full-time employees equivalent throughout the calendar year 2019 and must have maintained a minimum of 2 full-time employees throughout calendar year 2019. We're truly trying to help the mom-and-pop businesses, Trishitti said. A local bank will process all loan applications and be responsible for community outreach about the program, according to the proposal. In return, the bank will receive administrative fees, and MDC will deposit loan funds with the bank. Harris told the Reporter Telegram in a subsequent email that as soon as the program details and administration are finalized, a page will be launched on the MDC website with all these details, something she anticipates happening by the end of the month. Board members also heard that sales tax collections are about $2.8 million below the $12 million that had been budgeted, with May collections for March sales down 9.46% from the previous year. Our June report for April sales should be the absolute lowest of the downturn, Harris told board members. Gary Law, director of project development, said that with some projects coming to fruition, the MDC is looking at the next set of projects for the MDC to address. Those include participation in improvements to the Jowl and Midland draws with the goal of improving drainage and reducing floodplains. Another project is expanding the Interstate 20 backage roads at Otis Road and at Stokes Avenue. The MDC also plans to work with the state on expanding County Road 1250 from Interstate 20 to Business Interstate 20 East, which Law said could include a $28 million interchange near Schlumberger's offices as designed by the state. Expansion of Mockingbird Lane between Garfield and A Streets is also in that next set of projects. Now to the inside pages. Longtime Midlander has been through protests before, by Stuart Doreen. Courtney Ratliff might not be a veteran of protests like the one that took place Sunday, but he does have some experience after time spent living in Dallas. And with not much organization, the Black Lives Matter rally at Midland Park Mall needed someone with experience to ensure an end result of peaceful protesting. In advance of the rallies in Midland and Odessa on Sunday night, there was social media chatter that out-of-town organizers would be coming in to make a bad situation worse. It didn't appear to happen that way. What started as a protest with 40 to 60 people in Midland expanded quickly. Heading into a second and third hour, it became apparent that the protest could be measured in hundreds, not dozens. Estimates had the Black Lives Matter side reaching 300. I know the spirit of Midland, Ratliff said. I've been here for so long. I know Midlanders care about each other, and this was an opportunity to prove that. It has been beautiful from the beginning. It's been nonviolent. It's been peaceful. It is what a protest should be. Ratliff appreciated the diversity of the protesters, whether with race, age, or gender. The 41-year-old said he has experience with protests, a product of living 12 years in Dallas, the lone time span he has spent away from Midland. He said that during rallies, it is important to recognize those people who could potentially spark something more than the peaceful protest so many sought after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. There were just people that were really dedicated to making sure that this happened the right way, Ratliff said. He said that rallies have tense moments, and this one was no different. He credited the Midland Police Department and the way they handled the whole situation. I had communication and open dialogue with them, Ratliff said. If anything got tense, I was able to talk with someone and say, what do you need me to do? Priest stands as witness to values he holds, by Stuart Doreen. The Reverend Freddie Perez of St. Stephen's Catholic Church might be short in stature, but he still stands out in a crowd. Wearing his clerical collar and black clergy robe, Perez stood with protesters to be a witness to the values he believes and what he stands for, the charity he preaches, the justice he preaches, and that human justice, quality of life and dignity of life is for everybody. You know, we have to remind ourselves when we lose sight of who we are as a people and we start treating people as other is when we really get into these problems, Perez said. You know, Jesus on earth, he walked around and, in reality, is the true other that ever existed because he's incarnate by his Father. So apart from Jesus Christ, there is no other. There is only us. There is only one body. When one member of that body hurts, the whole body should be hurting. The whole body should be crying out for justice. The whole body should be crying out, you know, for those values that we all hold true and basic to our human nature. Perez was one of a few on hand to deliver prayer for those willing to listen and accept it. He appreciated the peaceful nature of the protests and said whether it was the Black Lives Matter side or the counter-protesters who showed up, we're all standing for the same humanity that's hurting. But what happens when we forget about our own humanity is when these measures have to be taken. Of course, always taking into consideration taking a peaceful, moral route. Counter-protest. The Christians Show Up to Back Police by Stuart Doreen. A Black Lives Matter protest took an unprecedented turn Sunday night when, from the parking lot at Midland Park Mall, one could hear, "Here comes the Christians." The self-proclaimed Nino America led his counter-protest to the Black Lives Matter movement to back Midland police and offer his perspective on protests that resulted in violence and looting. America told the Reporter Telegram, he self-identifies as Nino America because he doesn't believe in labels, such as being a Hispanic or conservative, although he made it clear he is a Christian. That mattered during the evening back and forth with Black Lives Matter protesters as he asked them why they were okay with abortions that killed blacks. He also said that as a born-again Christian, it was important for the event to be nonviolent. I'll tell you right now, I'll let them beat me down because I don't believe in violence whatsoever, America said. I'm a Christian. As Black Lives Matter protesters who are frustrated by the death of George Floyd, America said his frustration is from watching the fire set, damage done, and looting taking place in riots across the nation. I could not sleep last night, seeing my country being burned to smithereens, and criminals and hoodlums taking liquor stores and shoes out of stores and beating people to a pulp. America said, it's disgusting, and America's better than that. Politics was part of the protest. The counter-protest included a flag supporting President Donald Trump and making America great again, and their leader had a red hat that called for MAGA and a shirt with the stripes and stars of the American flag. America had previously protested against the Reporter Telegram for coverage he deemed wasn't fair to the president. "Oh, I don't consider myself nothing but an American," he said. "I do not like labels. I'm not a minority. I'm not a Mexican. I am an American. And it's not very hard for me to protest because I'm a born-again Christian. I have a loud mouth, and the Lord Jesus Christ is my Savior. I don't fear the Rona, coronavirus. I don't fear Black Lives Matter. I don't fear Antifa. I only fear God." Son of Police Officer Wants to See Needle Move in Right Direction by Stuart Doreen. The last thing Anthony Thomas wanted to do Sunday was sit on the couch. The field engineer for an oil services company wanted more. After watching the rest of the nation react to the brutality of the death of George Floyd, he needed more. Taking part in the Black Lives Matter protest at Midland Park Mall provided that opportunity. "It's just you want to do something," said Thomas, who has lived in Midland for 10 years. Thomas talked about the love and feeling of togetherness that comes with African Americans and others participating in an event about social justice. What that tells me is that everybody recognizes what's right, what's wrong, and hopefully it'll change something, Thomas said. Thomas said he grew up in Houston, the son of a police officer and nephew of a sheriff. He attended a private high school that was predominantly white, but knew firsthand about run-ins with police. He told the Reporter Telegram that growing up, his father talked with him about how to handle himself in those situations. Every black son has that conversation with the parent growing up, he said. Still, he is experienced in being pulled over after not doing anything. Of course, that's just the way it goes, Thomas said. Thomas hoped law enforcement would be involved Sunday night as the protest, he said, was about everyone coming together and that police would have the opportunity to watch what we do and then know why we're all out here. And everybody can go home peacefully, Thomas said. Then something was accomplished. Thomas called for peaceful protests, but said he understands what America is seeing play out in larger metropolitan areas across the nation. The fires, violence, and destruction, he said, isn't exclusive to protests about police violence. Whoever's going to win the Stanley Cup this year, I guarantee you, there's going to be a riot in that town, he said. Of those wanting to know about the violence, Thomas asked, what would make someone so angry that they would risk their lives, right, and go out onto the street? Because the reality is, whenever you go and you participate in a riot, and then things turn that way, there's a real chance you can get shot and killed. What would it take for you to get that mad? What would it take for you to get that mad? To get out of your house, go downtown, and burn a building down? There's something. Maybe this incident wasn't that incident to where you can relate, but there is something that would push your buttons to the point that you would say, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. And at that point, you're not worried about what it's accomplishing or what it's not. Thomas said his participation Sunday was more about the Floyd incident, the man pleading for his life, and that no one came to help him. Thing is, police officers have been killing black men since before there was ever a statistic about black-on-black violence, Thomas said. Right? So it's just emotional. It's just when you're black, you say, that could have easily had been me. And I think for this one, it was just the intensity of it. Not one time during a 15-minute interview before the protest at Midland Park Mall did Thomas call for violence. In fact, he said, peaceful always matters. It's always the right thing to do. Maybe that is the experience that comes with being 37. Thomas said the younger participants haven't yet figured out how to control their emotions, something evident during the 4.5-hour protest Sunday. Just as Thomas said, one could say, as the intensity of the protest rises, the testosterone and energy turns to anger. They don't know how to take that emotion and bring something positive out of that, Thomas said. And so they turn to violence because they see a violent act. It's natural to think, if somebody hits you, you hit them back. They feel like that's what they're doing. They just don't understand the long-term implications of that. So I don't condone violence, right? Thomas said. I'm not going to go out and I'm not going to burn anything down. I'm going to tell my kids not to go out and burn anything down. But I'm well aware somebody is going to do it. But at the end of the day, what you hope for is that this moves the needle in the right direction. That is what you hope for. Former Deputy Works with Black Lives Matter to Keep It Peaceful by Stuart Doreen. Jamie Moreno has worked in law enforcement, including for the Midland County Sheriff's Office, Ector County Correctional Center, and for the federal government transporting inmates. On Sunday night, the 24-year-old was one of the people working the line in the Black Lives Matter protest at Midland Park Mall. The longtime Midlander was one of the protesters who spent time keeping the line of protesters off the street and then away from a line of Midland Police Department officers there to separate Black Lives Matter protesters from a smaller counter-protest. The protesters, they have their rights to protest, Moreno said. In my experience, once you are handcuffed, you have to actually get off him. No matter what, you have to use less than lethal force. He's already subdued. The officer didn't get off for 9 minutes and followed his own protocol, he said, referring to the incident in Minneapolis in which a black man died after a white officer kneeled on his neck. Anything could have happened here the same way. He said that working the line was also to help protect those in law enforcement that he said was outnumbered 10 to 1. Moreno said that there were younger kids wanting to be violent, but the Black Lives Matter protesters kept it under control. It's like one of the sergeants told me, Moreno said. If it would have gotten out of hand, he would have gone and took everybody out. Being peaceful is the only way we'll actually get our word across. We don't figure out nothing or fix anything in the world if we get violent. Moreno said the size of the protest, which reached an estimated 300 people, was a little more than I actually imagined for Midland. Moreno said police can cross the line, and that is a reason he left law enforcement. It was real important for me to keep the protest peaceful, Moreno said. It's like they say, the pen is mightier than the sword, and here your voice is mightier. Planning and Zoning approves zone request to allow short-term housing, by Mella McEwen. In a brief meeting Monday, with only one consent item and one public hearing scheduled, planning and zoning commissioners paved the way for new housing. Commissioners unanimously approved a request by Tyler West for a zone change from 01 Office District to PD Planned Development District for a housing development at 7401 Briarwood Avenue. The request would allow for a residence, nonprofit office, and retail space, as well as short-term housing. The short-term housing will be used by social workers and families in crisis. An existing residence at the site already has 1,209 square feet of office and retail space being used by the Attic Foster Closet. There are also plans to build 6 tiny homes, one-bedroom, one-bath units. The first will house the 4 members of the John Mark Eccles family. All homes will be 300 to 500 square feet. The subsequent homes will be for 1 or 2 people. West will have to amend the site plan for any future development. In the consent item, commissioners unanimously approved a final plat of the Riverbend Edition, a 23.19-acre tract of land on the east side of Fairgrounds Road and south of East Pecan Avenue. The applicant, Newton Engineering, seeks to plat the property into one lot to create a subdivision for apartment housing development. Local Roundup from Staff Reports. Committee selected for August 31st Memorial. Odessa Mayor David Turner has appointed a committee to choose an artist for a memorial to the August 31st shooting, according to a press release from Odessa Arts. The art piece will be installed at Memorial Gardens on 42nd Street. Close to 140 artists from across the United States applied for the commission via publicartist.org. The selection committee will narrow the field down to 3 finalists who will create a proposal for the site. The selected artist and ensign will be announced in August. Selection committee members are Odessa Mayor David Turner, CEO of Odessa Chamber of Commerce, Renee Earls, Odessa Public Art Committee, Richard Gillum, Odessa Arts Development Director, Cindy Graham, Odessa Arts Executive Director, Randy Hamm, United Grocery Stores Regional Vice President, John Jameson, Odessa City Manager, Michael Morero, Young Professionals of Odessa, Ryan Patton, Parks and Recreations Director, Steve Patton, and Odessa Public Art Committee member, Lorraine Perryman. 8 representatives of victims and their families will also be on the committee selection committee. The budget for the commission is $300,000, which will be paid for with a combination of hotel occupancy tax and private donations. Community members wishing to make a donation can call the Odessa Arts Office or visit odessaarts.org. City says child is one of 3 new coronavirus cases. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting its investigation on 3 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to 132. The 130th confirmed case is a male in his 30s who was tested by Midland Health. He is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is community acquired. The 131st confirmed case is a male in his 70s who was tested by Midland Health. He is currently an inpatient at Midland Health. The source of exposure is travel outside of the United States. The 132nd confirmed case is a male child, 0 to 9, who was tested by Midland Health. The boy is currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure is contact to known case. He is the 3rd Midland County child to test positive, according to data from the city. Ector County reports 7 more positive coronavirus cases. Ector County confirmed 7 more positive cases of coronavirus over the weekend, making the total 161. 3 of the positive cases were nursing home residents at Focused Care at Odessa. Ector County has 9 probable cases at this time, according to the ECHD website. ECHD reported that 117 people have recovered. There have been 2,504 tests taken, with 2,171 negative results and 172 pending results. ECHD has contacted 1,829 people during contact tracing. Medical Center Health System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH is treating 9 positive patients. 4 patients are on the isolation floor. 2 of those patients are from the Odessa Nursing Home. 5 patients are in critical care, and 4 of those patients are on ventilators. MCH received 5 coronavirus patients over the weekend. MCH has tested 103 positive case patients. In all, MCH has tested 1,335 people with 1,176 negative tests and 56 pending tests. Odessa Regional Medical Center CEO and President Stacy Brown said ORMC is treating 7 confirmed coronavirus patients. None are on a ventilator. 4 of the patients are from the Focused Care Center at Crane. 2 patients are from Focused Care at Odessa. 1 patient is from Big Spring. ORMC has tested 19 positive cases with 429 people tested. They have received 398 negative results and 12 results are still pending. Crime of the Week. Midland Crime Stoppers needs the public help with the recovery of a utility trailer and Kawasaki mule that were taken from the 3600 block of Black Wolf Trail in Northeast Midland. A 4-door black Chevy dually drove onto the victim's property at about 10 p.m., May 24th, parked behind the residence, and hitched a 2020 black Big Tex utility trailer onto his vehicle. Once the pickup reached the roadway, the front passenger exited the vehicle and ran toward the back of the residence where he took a red Kawasaki mule. The passenger is described as a white male. At the time of the incident, he was wearing a dark ball cap, dark long-sleeved shirt, and black shorts and black boots. We need your help in identifying the vehicle and persons responsible for this theft. CN 2005-27024. If you have any information on the suspects and it leads to an arrest, it will be worth some cash money. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or 1-800-7-LOCKUP or download our Crime Stoppers app called P3 Tips and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and you will remain anonymous. Surveillance video of the suspect can be viewed at MidlandCrimeStoppers.com or the Midland Crime Stoppers Facebook page, Midland TXCS. This is the opinion page. Opinion extra. Economy depends on course of coronavirus. For most of his presidency, Donald Trump's hopes for re-election have depended almost entirely on the economy, particularly in the swing states that he narrowly won in 2016. They still do. But now the state of the economy depends almost entirely on the course of coronavirus. There is no more important task facing the U.S. than bringing the public health crisis under control. The virus is still dangerous, and the priority should be to minimize the loss of life. That said, there is no denying that one of the major consequences of the coronavirus is economic. And by the time voters are making up their minds in late October, it's highly likely that the economic effects of the virus will be more salient than the public health effects. Indeed, that should be the hope. Voters have notoriously short attention spans. The mistakes made in the initial handling of the virus will be a distant memory. Moreover, as the virus continues to sweep across the globe, it's unlikely that the U.S. will be an outlier in terms of per capita loss of life. That implies that unless there is a second wave, the economy will once again be the dominant issue, and that opens up a second set of questions. On the one hand, even in the best-case scenario, unemployment is still likely to be high, probably in the double digits. As savings are exhausted, the economic pain for many families will be getting more acute. On the other hand, barring an absolute disaster, the economy will be recovering, at least temporarily, at a breakneck pace. This doesn't require rosy optimism about a V-shaped recovery. Even if the economy regains only a fraction of the jobs lost through the summer, the autumn may very well see the best economic data we've seen in the history of this country, according to one of former President Barack Obama's economic advisors. How will voters react? So far, it seems that their response is real, but muted. Trump's job approval on the economy has fallen significantly from its highs near the beginning of the year, but remains above water. Fascinatingly, several polls have showed that voters trust Trump's handling of the economy over that of Joe Biden, even as those same polls indicate they trust the Democratic challenger more when it comes to containing the spread of the virus. That's further evidence that voters don't currently view the virus and the economy as related, and they may be even less likely to do so come November. That has some Democratic operatives anxious about the possibility of a nightmare scenario for Biden in the fall. That seems unlikely to the extent the economic models of the election are still valid. They suggest what happens over the summer is more important than what happens in the fall. Undecided voters don't base their decision on the latest job numbers. They base it on how they feel about their own economic circumstances. There is often a lag between the two. When President George H.W. Bush lost re-election in 1992, for example, the unemployment rate was actually falling, nearly a half percentage point between June and October. Most voters, however, still viewed the economy as on a downward trajectory. Trump's current high marks on the economy may reflect a similar sort of lag. Unemployment claims have skyrocketed in the last few months, but for many, the economic pain is only now beginning. If the lag is still there in the fall, then the lingering economic damage from the pandemic may hurt the president's chances more than any nascent recovery would help. by Carl W. Smith, Bloomberg. Death Notices, published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, June 2nd. Jan Paddock Todd. Jan Paddock Todd, 66, of Midland, passed away Monday, June 1st. No services will be held. She is survived by her husband, Terry V. Todd, son, Tanner R. Todd, daughter, Taryn K. Todd, her mother, Beverly Jean Umask, two brothers, three sisters, and four grandchildren. Maddie Laura Howell. Maddie Laura Pyle Howell, 95, of Midland, passed away Friday, May 29th. Graveside services will be held Wednesday, June 3rd, at the Beggs Cemetery, located in Beggs, Oklahoma, at 1 p.m. She is survived by her daughter, Charlotte Nix, of Anna, Texas, two sisters, and one grandson, and one great-grandson. Robert Larry Kirk. Robert Larry Kirk, 74, passed away May 27th in Odessa. Larry was born on November 19th, 1945, to Elva and Glenn Kirk in Gorman, Texas. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home Crematory. Joan Lorraine. Joan Lorraine Lamb, 87, of Midland, passed away May 30th. The family will hold private services at a later date. Survivors include sons Scott Lamb and Doug Lamb. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Walter Dub Brown. Walter Dub Brown, 67, of Midland, passed away May 30th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, June 5th, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Survivors include wife, Leanne. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, June 2nd. Three Odessa nursing home residents positive by Michael Merlot. Three residents of focused care at Odessa nursing home were hospitalized over the weekend after testing positive with COVID-19. An Ector County Health Department statement released on Saturday detailed that a 75-year-old woman and a 74-year-old man at the Odessa nursing home tested positive for the virus and are currently hospitalized. A similar release was put out Sunday, detailing that an 80-year-old man had also tested positive at Focused Care at Odessa and was hospitalized. The three Odessa nursing home residents reportedly tested positive for COVID-19 after getting tested again due to symptoms following the Odessa fire rescue tests. This brings the total number of cases from the facility to four. Three of these cases are residents which were received over this weekend, and one is an employee, which was the first case. The Monahans Chamber of Commerce announced Monday that all of the COVID-19 tests from the focused care at Monahans Nursing Home came back negative. Rebecca Reed, a focused care representative, said in a text Monday that three focused care at Crane residents died over the weekend at the facility. Five focused care at Crane residents have died in total from COVID-19-related illnesses. The Ector County Health Department detailed in a Monday release that there have been 161 positive COVID-19 cases in the county, with 9 probable and 39 active positive cases. Out of 2,504 tests, 5 people have died and 117 have recovered, while there have been 2,171 negative tests. During Monday's virtual COVID-19 hospital briefing, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that out of 1,335 tests, MCH has had 103 positive tests and 9 are in the hospital. 4 are on the designated floor, including 2 focused care at Odessa patients. 5 are on the critical care unit, and 4 of them are on ventilators. 56 of the MCH tests are pending, and there are no persons under investigation in the hospital. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said that out of 429 tests, 19 people have tested positive for the virus. 398 have been negative, and 12 are still pending. She said ORMC has 7 COVID-19 patients in the hospital, and none of them are on ventilators. 4 of the in-house patients are from the Focused Care at Crane Nursing Home, and 2 are from the Odessa Focused Care. Tippin said that as numbers rise, "This weekend has been the biggest number we've seen together, MCH and ORMC, but I know our plans are in place. We talk about them every week and we're ready should it go higher than this."
This is Michael continuing to read Odessa Americans, Tuesday, June 2nd edition. Protests continue. March will be Wednesday. Black Lives Matter protest in Odessa. A protest march is planned at 6 p.m. Wednesday to begin at City Hall, marching east on 8th Street to Grant and south to the Odessa Fire Department. Odessa attorney Gavin Norris said he is helping organize the event and that the rally be at the OPD headquarters with city officials, law enforcement leaders, and young community leaders speaking. Norris said his message will be one of unity and to bring awareness of his concerns about the deaths of blacks at the hands of the police and systemic racism within the police system, and also will focus on the educational system. "Young minorities are not being heard," Norris said. "We need you to hear us. What we are demanding and requesting for changes, we are not interested in more talking and dialogue, but we are interested in more results." Norris said Sunday's downtown march had a good turnout, and he was hoping to get some of the young organizers from that event to also attend the Wednesday event. More than 200 people marched in downtown Odessa during the Sunday Black Lives Matter protest in response to the death of George Floyd, who died in Minneapolis last week while being restrained by a police officer who is now charged with murder. The group, March for Change Odessa, took to Twitter, announcing that there would be a protest on Sunday. Protesters walked up and down Grant for the better part of 3 hours, chanting "Black Lives Matter," "George Floyd," "No Justice, No Peace," among others. Renee Morris said the demonstration was productive and the community came together on one accord. "There were multiple races out here standing for one cause, that we all matter. Black lives do matter. All lives matter. But what the world needs to know is that black lives matter. The tragedy that happened to that young man and his family," she said, "it let the world know that law enforcement needs to be held accountable. You can't murder somebody and just walk away because of a badge. That's what's the most horrific thought. He was helpless, so it hurts my heart for his family. But maybe it sparked something in law enforcement across the world." Demonstrators started their march to the OPD headquarters, and some protesters took a knee facing the front entrance of the building as a demonstration. The group hung around the area for several minutes before marching back towards the Bank of America building. The protest took a route to City Hall before returning to the police station a second time. While major cities around the country have responded to the killing of George Floyd in different ways, some in Odessa expressed their anger, and some had smiles on their faces. Tryon Stevenson, 30, smiled while marching to OPD. I have a smile on my face because everything is beautiful right now, Stevenson said. I had my own reservations at the start, but to see how everybody has come together, all races, you just look at people. You wouldn't even think some people would be here. It's just amazing to see how people came together and completely blew my expectations out of the water. Stevenson said, something like this is important in Texas because, to be honest with you, we've never seen anything like this. It's good to see this. There were little kids marching. There were teenagers, 20s, 30s, 40s. Every decade of age is out here. Stevenson spoke about the different emotions he's gone through dealing with racism throughout his life and in the past months. There's a lot of rage and frustration every day, like there's tears in my eyes all the time. But people look at it as, oh, you're being emotional, suck it up. But it's hard to see that when you've seen injustice to your race ever since you were a little child, he said. While the protest was peaceful, demonstrators were met with opposition at one point by a person driving down 8th Street, giving the middle finger to demonstrators. Some protesters responded by crowding the vehicle, kicking it, and throwing water bottles. Older members of the protest had used themselves to shield the vehicle and urged the few who had surrounded it to settle down. Jaston Taylor, 37, a Midland resident, said that he marched because of the police brutality that has happened over the past few months. This is about people of all races and colors coming together to say, look, something has to change, Taylor said. This has been going on way too long. We are living in a world, a country, that has had systemic racism for so long, and it's time for people to come together. It's time for people to say enough is enough, and we have to do that with our voices. We're doing it with our actions, with this protest, and the hope is we will start doing this at the voting booths with our votes.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.